Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of 410 Sports Talk. James Haskell, Glenn Martin, DK, the 410 Sports Talk crew is here, and it is finally game week. Finally, the NFL season starts this week. I cannot wait. Glenn, how are you doing, my man?
Oh, I'm doing good. I mean, I can't believe it. Not only is football here, but fantasy football is here as well. And, of course, we had our draft, and it was it's fun as it usually is. And yeah, I can't. I absolutely cannot wait for this season to start. It helps. I think the Ravens were a little lucky in how the schedule makers made their first game. I mean, I don't know if there's a better matchup week one that you could hope for than the Houston Texans with a rookie starter
maybe
coming
the
into
Cardinals?
M&T Bank. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the Cardinals have already made it clear that they want to lose games. So. Yeah, I guess that's the only team I think would be more beneficial to play. So it's looking like a good week to be a Ravens fan, Jimbo.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be I've said it before, it's going to be a party at the bank on Sunday. I'm expecting a double-digit victory. You know about the line? Has it held?
Last I saw it was like 9.5.
I'm just curious if there's been any movement. You know, obviously we'll talk about all this, but nicks and bruises and things like that. So I'd be interested to know if any of that changes anything. I just want to say that I took Lamar Jackson third overall. That's how much faith I have in Lamar Jackson.
My man Jimbo shook the whole league up. Third pick, Lamar Jackson.
Number one fantasy scorer this year.
Hey, he could be. I wouldn't be shocked. I think it surprised a lot of people. It also broke some hearts at the back end of that first round.
That was my favorite part. It was a bummer that my favorite part of the draft was at the very beginning. Everyone gets up there all resolute, all defiant. They're like, bam, Christian McCaffrey. Bam, Justin Jefferson. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do this to see. Rotla literally was sitting next to me and was like, oh, I'm taking Lamar first round. I was like, oh, are you? Huh?
Are you now? Yeah.
And I just got up there. I'm like, Lamar.
you got quite a few Ravens, Jimbo.
I got two of them.
Oh, did you get two? You got OBJ?
No, I got Zay. Dobbins.
Oh, okay.
I got Lamar and Dobbins.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then Pierney got Flowers. I think it was Pierney. I thought about OBJ, but then I thought TJ kind of, not to devalue him or anything, but kind of reached on him a little bit. Not that he reached, but I thought I could sneak him in later. You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you, but look, you can't call somebody reaching when you took Lamar third.
Well, right. That's up to everyone's determination, right? But
being the leading scorer, then it's not, right?
Crazy, right? That'd be awesome. And look, I want him to be, because if he's catching the football, you know who's throwing it to him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. You know? It's a double whammy. But yeah, so we're excited. Football has arrived. The Orioles are... I mean, they're just continuing to look like one of, if not the best team in all of baseball. So it's a really good time to be a Maryland, Baltimore, specifically sports fan.
I also just want to identify the fact that you see this right here.
Yeah.
My son, that's a forehead to the face right there.
Excuse
Bless
me.
You.
Thank you.
Right to the old kiss, right to the old face, dude. Forehead.
Oh, did your eyes water and get the,
oh,
all that?
Oh, dude, all of it, man. Yeah.
Shout out to Sean. I saw that name actually when I was looking up names. Mine is much more X-rated than his name, but his team name is April Showers Brings a Flowers, and I like that as a fantasy football name. Mine, yeah. Let's just say my quarterback is Tua, so it's a play on his name.
Is it?
It is. It is.
Wait, I thought I knew your team name.
I changed it this year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was the Cutie Patooties. That was the name of my team, you know what I mean? But anyway, we don't look. Mine is a little inappropriate. You'll see it, Jimbo, and you'll see why I don't really
hold on.
Feel comfortable.
Oh gosh,
naming my team out loud.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I'm El Vato Loco.
That's right.
Which is a watered down version of what I was when my wife made me change it.
Oh, I think yours had a little bit of spice to it as well.
Oh yeah.
Marco says, I got LJ and Mark on my fantasy team. It's over. That's a heck of a 1-2 punch. I think, that's probably the 1-2 punch I would have wanted from the from the Ravens because, man, that's his guy. Always will be his guy. But
Absolutely. Well, let's kind of use that as a segue real quick because we're going to talk Ravens, but tonight Glenn did us all the favor of booking some guests. We're doing a bit of around the AFC, a little bit around the AFC North. We're getting all the way around. We did have some issues with our you guys know, of course, the infamous Chris Carter that covers the Pittsburgh Steelers and man of many hats isn't it doesn't look like he's gonna be able to make it, but we're hanging out in Ohio tonight.
Yeah,
Northeast Ohio. Is Cincinnati more Central Ohio?
I'm not that familiar. Yeah, I don't know
either. But the B&O Railroad is Baltimore to Ohio. I think that ends in near Cincinnati, the railroad. Anyway, the museum is right here in Baltimore.
You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You learned something here tonight.
That's right. If you got kids, take them to the museum. It's awesome. They'll love it. But anyway, yeah. All I'm saying is that we are meeting with a few. We're going to have a few folks on, right, Glenn? We have Anthony, of course, Costanza, mm-hmm. who covers the Bengals.
Like George.
Yeah.
I think it's Costanza, isn't it?
Costanza.
Costanza is from Seinfeld. But that's okay, because that's a classic. And
that's a compliment, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It's like when they call me Eddie Haskell. It's just, I'll take it.
There you go. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or Dennis the Menace is what I used to always get.
There you go. Mr.
Wilson. That's my jam, dude. Yeah. Anyway.
Look, now, who did you get on from the Browns real quick?
Oh, yeah, from the Browns. It's actually exciting. It's a new guest. I mean,
yeah.
We always like having our regulars on here, but this is a new guest. We have Jacob Roach, who covers the Browns for the Browns Wire, also co-host of the Barking Browns show. So certainly a guy who knows his stuff. I'm excited to meet him.
You guys obviously can throw any questions you want in the chat. If you want to be sure that they absolutely get answered, if you got something really, you know, on your mind regarding either of the teams, obviously sending a super chat never hurts if you absolutely want an answer. But either way, throw your answers in there or questions in there, excuse me, and we try and get to as many as we can.
Yeah, we got to get caught up on all the changes to each team in this division, their kind of hopes and dreams and their outlook for the season, because I think it's consensus everywhere that this is one of the two best divisions, and most people say it's the best division. It's really just this one in the AFC East is the decision between which is the best division. I got to say that the North, but I'm a little bit biased. So,
oh, for sure,
that's okay.
No, but I mean, it's hard to disagree, dude. I had a buddy who's a Commanders fan said that it's the NFC East. How? Yeah, the Eagles are good. Who else is good?
I mean, I'm willing to say Dallas has a good roster. I just don't know if their quarterback can quit throwing to the other team. But the Giants, to me, aren't for real because of Danny Dimes. And,
until he proves you otherwise.
Quarterback. Who, Danny Dimes? Exactly. And then
right,
Sam
you know
Howell.
What I mean? Just paying him doesn't make him. Yeah.
They don't buy into him.
Paying
him
doesn't make him good.
That's true.
You know, it just doesn't automatically make him good. So anyway, yes, I totally agree. I'm looking forward to the gauntlet of the AFC North this year. But Glenn, I think that one of the things we should chat about real quick as we're kind of waiting is, you know, there's some stuff going on, of course, here in Baltimore. It never sleeps. I kind of wanted to start with just some, you know, they talked about the Lamar-Mark combo. And I was glad to hear John Harbaugh's comments on Mark Andrews. It was from an injury perspective, you know, all players. I kind of want to start with Mark.
Yeah.
I want to say, first of all, the Ravens are extremely healthy, in my opinion. Obviously, you got Marlowe that's out. But outside of Marlowe, as far as, like, major contributors, I can't think of anyone else on the list. Mark has been out, but John has already said he's going to be back on tomorrow to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little nervous about the Mark thing just because I don't want this to be something that's going to linger throughout the season. I hope this is something that it has a chance to heal correctly. That way, this isn't a nagging thing that's going to keep him consistently out of practice or make it nerve-wracking. Is he going to suit up? Is he not going to suit up? Now, they got depth at the tight end position, and it makes me feel a little more comfortable. But when I heard I saw somebody drop it in the chat also that this was possibly the first time we were going to see what the combination of what Lamar, JK, Mark Andrews, and Rashad Bateman for the first time all in the field together.
Mm.
Well, I don't know if it's a guarantee, even though Harbaugh certainly expressed confidence in it, but I mean, he's seen apparently last week doing individual work on the trainers on a separate field, but hasn't been present in the recent media portion of the practice availability. Now they only get to see the first half hour, so it's possible he could have come out after they left. But I mean, how comfortable, let me ask you this, Jimbo, how comfortable would you feel going into Houston if Mark Andrews wasn't able to play? Or actually going for Houston to come in here, of
right,
course.
Right. I knew what you meant. Yeah. Yeah, I'm comfortable. I mean, come on. Like, I'm sorry, Houston Texans. I'm not trying to
It sounded like you were just kind of like, hey, come on. It doesn't matter who we run out there.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think there's a lot of things going against the Houston Texans in this game. One, John's record as a coach in openers. Two, the fact that they have a rookie quarterback. Three, the fact they're on the road. Four, the fact that Lamar Jackson is historically hot early on in the season. Obviously, want him to continue to be. And fifth, of course, being that even if Mark isn't there, this is by far and away the best passing group of pass catchers that he's ever had in his career. So I think all those things being said, I want Mark there because he is, and anyone that's been to practice knows that is his, you know, Mark is his security blanket, but I wouldn't be sweating bullets if Mark doesn't end up out there. What about you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point about Lamar as a week one passer, I mean, look at his week one numbers as a starter since he's been in the league. I mean, look at those passing numbers. Almost 70% completion, 12 tutties, one pick. Mm. And that doesn't even begin to talk about the, you know, the rushing attempts. So he's pretty good in week one. I think it's going to be a tough
four fumbles is a little scary.
Yeah, but only two lost, Jimbo.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, and but I hope the mesh point was always, it has been an issue in certain seasons in the initial part. I wonder if they're gonna take extra care into that department because we did see some fumbling issues. And let's be honest, JK hasn't had a ton of time on the practice field with Lamar. So I guess it's possible we could see some mesh point issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree with you there. I also think that early on in Lamar's career too, you remember like he'd run around and kind of flail the ball a little bit and the ball would
backyard football a little bit.
Yeah, but it that's cut down a lot. So I think that's another issue as well. But really quickly, a quick aside, 2 seconds. Who drafted Travis Kelce?
Oh, I know, right? He went in the first round. But whoever it is, they're going to be a little salty. I don't think it was. Here we go. I have it up in front of me, actually. It was Cook. It was actually Dave.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's tough to see in hyper, especially a guy who hasn't missed a game for injury in 9 years.
Yeah, man. Crazy, right?
Yeah, I'm not mad, though. He's not on my team, and I wouldn't mind seeing the Lions upset the Chiefs week one bit.
Man, that would be incredible.
Yeah, it would certainly be
exciting. That would be Commanders level preseason game when they beat us.
Yeah, they'd be storming the field and trumpets playing. I mean, yeah. Seth says, Lamar gonna dookie on them like that Browns game. I mean, I think it's gonna be rough for the Texans, but they're still a good team. I mean, I don't think the John Harbaugh and this group of guys is gonna let themselves be caught off guard. Like, this isn't to me like a trap game because it's the first game of the year. I mean, they've been jacked up. Maybe if this was week 10, maybe you have a chance for a letdown or a bit of a trap game. But to me, I think these guys are gonna be hitting on all cylinders early on. And I'm not so sure Houston's going to be I think they're going to have like a dumbed down playbook just because they got a rookie.
Yeah, I agree with that. Man, I just can't wait to see him back there when you know he's under pressure. I'll tell you what's going to be really fun. I was actually talking to TJ about this on Sunday. Is, of course, we'll talk about this. You know, we're worried about the edge and people are worried about the corners. But, man, he's going to have to deal with that pressure coming up the middle. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about Medebike. You're talking about Travis Jones. You're talking about Michael Pierce. You're talking about when they throw Clowney on the inside. And there's probably, Broderick Washington. There's some big boys up front that can really rush the passer.
Yep.
And I think it's really exciting. I mean, look how much money Chris Jones is asking for. And I'm not saying any of these guys are Chris Jones, but it just shows you how impactful these guys are when they can make disruptions in the quarterback's face. Right, it's just so valuable.
Have anyone close? I mean, just think about this: Chris Jones, when he's on the field, the Chiefs defense has the number one pressure rate against quarterbacks. When he's off the field, they drop to 28th.
My goodness,
that's the difference that guy makes. Now, like you're saying, Medebike and they're not him, but they're pretty damn good, and they got a pretty damn deep group where it's not a big drop off. Whether Travis Jones, Medebike, Broderick. It's not a big drop off, no matter who's in there, and that can mean that these guys are, you know, they're going in there with juice. You know, they're not going in there dragging because they don't played 60 snaps.
Right. Yeah, it's gonna be so much fun, man. I can't wait to watch him beat. Now, look, the one thing you got to say about a kid from Ohio State, certainly he's played in stadiums that hold the same amount of people, that make the same amount of noise. Like, I don't think any of that's gonna be new. because, you know, when you play in stadiums that are 110,000 people and, you know, 100,000 people and things like that, I don't think that's going to overwhelm him, but just the speed, level competition, the physicality, the complexity, and you don't think Mike McDonald knows Stroud? You don't think he knows him? Of course he does. You don't think he's got a little something up his sleeve because he's an Ohio State kid? You better believe it. He's got now. Obviously, Mike's going to do everything he can every week. Doesn't matter who he's up against. But ultimately, look, these guys know each other because Mike is a Michigan guy, at least for that 1 year, and Stroud is an Ohio State kid. So there's familiarity there.
Game planned against him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to use that to his advantage. Know his tendencies, know what he's good at, what he's not good at. So, can't wait. Anyway.
Let's see. Sean says, are you guys doing the competition this year? We're not only doing it, I will reclaim my rightful place.
Wait, who won last year?
I don't recall. I mean, I like to look forward in life. Where are my shades? Because my future's so bright.
I don't know
where my shades are. But Sean, we are doing the competition. And I've decided this year that I'm not gonna take it light on my opponents this year. I'm gonna be a bit of a blood in the water type approach to this one. When I see weakness, I'm going to step on the throats of my opponents and not let them hang around like I've done in years past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I have nothing to say just because I won. I mean, like, you know, what else am I supposed to say?
I don't know, man. I like to look at the future, you know.
Hey, that's fine.
I don't like to look too much in the rearview mirror. But yeah, Sean, we're going to do it, and I'm going to whip these guys' ass.
Taking candy from a baby. That's all it's going to be.
It's going to be bad news this year.
I'm actually kind of nervous that DK is going to beat us both because now Brad's not here. For some reason, I feel like that's going to improve DK's game.
Yeah, you think so?
Well, and Brad was cheating half the time because he was going last after we all submitted our... Then he was like, let me...
Mm-hmm.
Like at 11:55 a.m. or at 12:55 a.m.
Yep. Now, let me ask you this, Jimbo. Were you at all disappointed? It looks like Anthony Brown might have been let go, and they brought Tay Hayes, the cornerback, back to the practice field or the practice squad. Do you think Anthony Brown will just kind of stay on speed dial when needed, or do you think he could find his way back onto the practice squad in the near future?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm not disappointed because I didn't really like how he played in the preseason. I felt like he regressed. Or at least just didn't look as good as you know. I mean, I don't know how much you can expect last year from an undrafted kid in regular season time, but he didn't do anything to me to, like, excite me. So I'd rather have Hayes. I mean, if just like the commenters are mentioning, I called it.
Yep, you did. You did. Okay. So,
you know, just stick with me. Stick with me. When Brandon Stevens makes a pick on Sunday...
Stick with me.
At me. At 410 Sports Talk on Twitter. Okay.
And Zay Flowers is our leading receiver.
That's right. Look. And make sure you at me and Kadri Ismail with a screenshot of Zay's stat line and Charlie Kohler's stat line.
Which probably, unless Mark's not playing, I got a feeling that his stat line
0-0-0.
Yep. I think Tay Hayes was more needed. Obviously, I don't see an avenue where Anthony Brown gets himself onto the field unless, I mean, knock on wood, just something crazy were to happen. So, I think Anthony Brown will be there when we need him. I can't imagine a team is really going to beat down the door to sign him. So let's hope for the Ravens' sake that we never need him. And same with Tay Hayes, though, honestly. I mean, I like Tay Hayes to stick around, but I'm hoping Marlon will be back and you know, these guys will be hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the one thing we won't be doing this year that we haven't done in a long time, I don't think we'll ever bring back, is, you know, the Ravens and Zay Flowers, of course, gone viral for his musical performance. But if you guys want to listen to good musical performance, our first season back in 2019, we were just a podcast. Every week, we did a weekly pick'em around the league, and the loser had to sing the other person a love song. It was really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And
it was kind of cringy.
Yeah. The most stress inducing moment of my week was, if I lost, singing. It was absolutely brutal. So we won't be doing that ever again.
No. No. I'm not singing on here.
After Glenn sung Usher, I was done. I just couldn't do it anymore.
I went all in, dude. Absolutely committed. Now I got to ask you this. If you guys ever saw it, it's horrible.
It's a good thing it wasn't on video, right?
Actually, on video, I might have wanted some people over because I think I make good faces when I'm singing. I think that's that's the underrated part of my singing is my facial expressions while singing. Top of the line, dude. Top notch.
Well, let's see it.
No, it has to be organic while I'm singing. Okay, so what do you mean? Watch, I mute it. Just sing on mute, just so you can see my face.
There you go. Just.
Yeah. Now we're gonna think of a penalty. We got to think of a penalty.
Yeah.
SMKG says he'd pay good money. No, you'd pay good money to hear me for about 2 seconds, and then pay money to turn me off.
There you go. Submit a super chat, dude. Glenn will do it.
Glenn will do it. Listen to you, dude.
Submit a super chat, man.
Voice all changed.
Where's Numbra? Where's Numbra, man?
When you need him. Damn it. But hey, I want to, before we have our guests, you know, kind of slowly coming in here, I just want to kind of get your take in general about the AFC North. Is there,
yeah, I guess, like, we should talk football.
Well, exactly. Do you have like a feeling that you know for sure who's going to finish last in this division?
I don't. I thought it was going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers, but to be honest, like, as tough as it is for me to say, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers did a really good job building on their week, like, mitigating their weaknesses and making, you know, doing good in the draft and the offseason. I'm not a big believer in Joey Porter, but their line got better. Their D-line got better. And they've got weapons on the outside, of course. But ultimately for them, it's really going to come down to Pickett.
Yep.
Is he real? Like, is Two Glove Kenny legitimate? I don't know. I still don't know. I mean, that's going to be a tough one. And that's ultimately what it's going to come down to. But if he's real, they're going to be well coached. They're going to fight hard. They got the best pass rusher in the NFL. I don't care what anyone says. Don't bring up Myles Garrett to me because TJ Watt is better. He's better. Sorry, guys. Now, Myles Garrett would beat the crap out of TJ Watt, I feel like, in a fight.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking rushing the passer.
That's right.
And certainly a bodybuilding competition. I mean, that wouldn't even be close. And a dinosaur trivia contest. It's like you.
Yeah, dude. Good.
But yeah, so I don't. I mean, right now, if you asked me today, though, I feel like it would end up being the Browns.
Yeah, but would you be shocked if, like, if the worst team in the division finishes maybe a game below 500?
Right, like, right around, like, yeah, right around 500. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Imagine, and it's not unimaginable to think that the Bengals could somehow end up last. I mean, the Ravens could end up last, but, like, we'll talk about the Bengals because they've been the kings of the North, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the division is so competitive, a few games fall the wrong way. Joey gets a slow start because of the injury. You know, you could easily dig yourself in a hole that's just hard to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is their another year in a row where they went deep into the playoffs, and they're going to have to, you know, Mixon's, and there's this whole Joe Mixon thing. P. Ryan's gone. You know, they lost. Didn't they lose their safeties as well?
Bates,
I mean, look, there's a lot of things going on with the Bengals that, who knows, they could take a step back. This might be wishful thinking on my end, but ultimately, it's not unimaginable, right?
Well, especially it comes down to oftentimes health. Like if they get if they get dinged up, I mean, of course, if Burrow, if any quarterback gets hurt, then it's a whole different story.
Sure.
But even if they lose, like, what if Jamar Chase is forced to miss 6 weeks? You know, he got hurt last year.
Yeah,
that offense looks a lot different when you lose that speed on the outside because Higgins can't take the lid off, Boyd can't take the lid off, and I think that is the only, but everybody's susceptible to the injury bug. I mean, the Ravens have plenty of guys. If you take them out, they're going to be a much worse football team. So, yeah, it could end up being the war of attrition. Whoever's the healthiest ends up being the team that comes out of the North. But I think, let's see what our Bengals expert has to say on this topic, because why are we talking orange and black when we have the orange and black insider himself? Appreciate welcoming him back to the show for the what is this? How many times has Anthony been on
the nth time?
Yeah, it's been quite a few times. Appreciate you joining us again, Anthony. Thanks. How you doing tonight?
Hey guys, I apologize. I'm a few minutes late. I apologize.
That is okay.
But it's always good talking with you guys. Good to see you guys. Have you had a good summer? Have you guys been doing pretty well?
Yeah, man.
Lamar signed his deal before the summer started, Anthony. So we've had a good summer.
You know, the rest is gravy.
Yeah, kicked it off right for you. I hear you. I'm waiting on our guy to do the same, man. So I mean, come on. There's not as much drama
surrounding your guy as there was surrounding our guy. I'm waiting to see that on Get Up every morning like we did with Lamar for a while.
Jeez, a whiz. And Anthony, you're not on the couch today, man.
So here's the deal. In my house, I had where I usually broadcast or where I had traditionally broadcasted. It was in an extra bedroom. We've since converted that to like a bunk bed situation for my kids and stuff. So I got the boot now into the garage, and I am scrambling to finish up the garage / studio for the season. I'm hoping to kind of unveil it as we do more shows this week and stuff. But I got the stanky boot out to the garage for my little guys.
Hey man, I'm sure you don't mind.
Yeah, they're okay.
He didn't seem like too convincing there, Jimbo. I think he might mind just a little bit. But Anthony, let's get to some football here.
Yeah, man.
If you could kind of give like a general overview of the biggest losses for this team in the offseason and the biggest new additions, and kind of what fans should expect as a difference from the Bengals team in last season and the Bengals team this year.
Well, the biggest losses, this was kind of the first free agency period since they've kind of put this team together in 2020 and had the two successful seasons in a row where they really felt kind of the free agency attrition. But some of it was expected. You know, Jesse Bates, they franchise tagged him, a really good safety. They franchise tagged him last year. He wanted a deal and he wanted to stay. What he wanted, what he got, was not what the Bengals were going to pay. They just don't value the safety position as high as great as Jesse Bates is. They just don't value that position as high as other teams. And so he left and went to Atlanta, a team that some people think that they're kind of on the rise a little bit, depending on how things go there. But he goes to Atlanta. But the two other losses that you didn't really expect was the other safety, Von Bell, who was a leader for this team and made a lot of big plays for him. Obviously, there's some limitations in terms of being a super adept coverage man, that sort of thing. I mean, he made a lot of plays in coverage, but, you know, his forte was being physical and playing in the box a little bit more, that sort of thing. And he and Bates complemented each other very, very well. And those guys were kind of the eyes and ears from that back part of the defense. And they would line up some of the guys in front of them at times and stuff. So those are two big losses. And then Samaje Perine, the backup running back, who, you know, he's a guy that did a lot of things as a pass protector, receiver, running back, that sort of thing. And so those are the losses that I think are being felt. And, of course, the biggest one on the plus side is Orlando Brown Jr. You guys are very, very familiar with him. Really, mm-hmm. really good player. Huge size, you know, I mean, Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ, and
right tackle.
Crybaby.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you guys have your opinions about them. No, but you know what's cool about, at least for us from the Bengals perspective, he came in and he really embraced kind of the culture, the fan base, and everything right away from really coming from two big rivals of the Bengals and landing right in there and then, you know, taking hold of that left tackle spot. The other thing that kind of was cool that happened from that, there were some bad feelings from Jonah Williams, the team's left tackle for the past 4 years. He gets, again, the stanky boot from his position at left tackle. They move him over to right, or that was the plan. He initially was not really a fan of that move and has since kind of embraced that in a contract year. And he seems to be looking pretty good on the right side. So that's kind of probably a little bit where the biggest pluses are for this team so far, at least free agency wise.
Well, what about, I mean, obviously I think the biggest plus, like Glenn said, would be Joey B signing an extension, right? From a longevity standpoint and a consistency standpoint. And I'm sure that that'll come down, but you know, the Ravens, I can only speak about the Ravens, have a history of annotating calf injuries when they are potentially Achilles related. Right. We've seen it times in the past with, you know, here locally with Jimmy Smith. And there's probably some other ones I'm missing. But another one I think of is like Richard Sherman and started the calf. And it almost seems
Kevin
like
Durant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it almost seems like it's a ticking time bomb. Give us the actual insight, you know, the inside information on what's going on in that calf with Joey Burrow. Is it truly a calf? Are there some whispers or that they're concerned that, you know, could be Achilles related? I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. But tell us what you know. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Dr. Anthony MD, right?
I
have all the answers on it. No, you know, I don't, there are no rumblings of anything else happening other than it being a, I think it was labeled as a grade one calf strain. I think they were uber cautious with the thing. You know, they didn't, and so much so, a little bit on the frustrating side, because we had said from the Bengal side of things, finally, Joe Burrow's going to have a normal offseason. No coming back from a torn knee, no COVID offseason, no appendicitis, right? All this kind of stuff that he has experienced each year in the league. And then all of a sudden he goes out there, I think it was the second practice, he pulls the calf strain. So I don't think there's any other ankle or Achilles or anything like that. I think they also were being cautious so as to not rush it back to potentially make that the situation, right? It becomes that situation by pushing it back too early. So he was out, I think, for a total, it was just under 5 weeks. So he, you know, they rested, they did what they needed to do. And so, you know, he seems to be fine. He's back at practice. They had a couple of days off here coming into this week, but last week he had a couple of practices and was moving around. It was kind of the first practice back was a little more drills and that sort of thing. Not so much, you know, true, you know, full practice type of stuff. But then he kind of eased into that. He looks like he's been planting on it fine, and there doesn't seem to be any setbacks. Early in the process too, I think it was the second preseason game, he came back out there on their field and he was seen in shorts and shirts kind of hopping around a little bit and throwing the ball and that sort of thing. So it was just one of those things where I don't think it was a serious injury, but if you don't rest it and take care of it the right way, it could be super nagging. It can linger on and that sort of thing. I think they were just being really cautious about it.
Fair enough.
Gotcha. Yeah. You know, one addition I think can be maybe a little bit overlooked. I like Irv Smith Jr. as a new tight end here. I think he's a good athlete. He can certainly run. I know they lost Hurst but I think Irv Smith could have a big year for them. What's the summer? What's training camp look like for Irv Smith Jr.?
He's looked good. I mean, with him, it's been two factors with him, right? In Minnesota, he was kind of a little bit of a second tight end option behind Rudolph for a lot of years, right? Or a couple of years there. And then, yep, you know, there's some injury stuff. So the athleticism's there, the profile to be productive is there. Now he's kind of the top guy and what's really kind of a weaker position group on this team, the tight end spot. So I think they're expecting that he's going to come in and do some nice things. But as you guys know, I mean, when you look at him as a potential passing target on this team, he's going to be number four, number five in the pecking order in terms of targets and shares. They'll have plays designed for him. They'll have routes designed where he's the primary target, obviously. But, I mean, you know, you're going to get the ball to the big three, a wide receiver. You know, running backs are going to chip in there as well, and then you probably get him in there. So he's probably fourth or fifth in terms of priority of getting the ball. But, I think he's got an opportunity to do something nice. Hurst had a pretty decent year with the Bengals last year on the same kind of one-year deal, and he parlayed that into a nice deal for himself. Smith's not as tall, but he is younger. And so I think maybe the upside is there even a little bit more than there was with Hurst.
Mm. Yeah. Now, I quickly, Jimbo, I'm sorry. I got to jump in here. I'd probably steal your question. P. Ryan's gone.
Jesus, this is the second show in a row.
That's right. Everyone, look, when me and Jimmy went to the game last year, the Bengals game, we were sitting behind some Bengals fans. Those Bengals fans hated Joe Mixon and said Samaje Perine should be the starter. They love Samaje. They did not like Mixon as much. They said he didn't have the explosiveness. I mean, look, we've seen this a lot, the backup quarterback syndrome. Everybody loves the backup. So I'm not, you know, necessarily on board, but I do think that was a big loss losing Samaje. I think secretly, I mean, I took him, I think, in the ninth or tenth round of my fantasy draft, and I think he's going to be a steal because I'm not sure that knee – on who's the guy in front of him is all the way back yet. So
Javonte, right? Javonte
Williams. Yeah. So I think Samaje could have a decent year in Denver, but what's the confidence level around Joe Mixon? I know he took a pay cut, which was certainly team friendly. What's your thoughts on Joe Mixon this year?
Joe Mixon had, for lack of better words, a very interesting offseason. There were some, for the first time really as a pro, we know about some of the stuff in college. For the first time as a pro, he kind of started hearing and seeing some off-field stuff. Now, he has since had charges on one incident dropped. Another one he wasn't involved in. It was, like, I guess, around his property or something like that.
A proximity issue.
Right, right. So all of that's behind him, and so he has now been elected a team captain for this team, and he's been a guy that they've relied on pretty heavily. Now, last year he had a decent year. He did have an injury that kept him out of a few games last year, and that's where Perine came in and got an opportunity to shine. Year prior, when they went to the Super Bowl, Mixon had an outstanding season, if you look at his statistics there. So, you know, I think the hope is he's still pretty young, and he has – well, he's gotten a lot of – he's been the primary back for a number of years for the Bengals. He's also been a player that has shared some carries throughout his career. It was Giovanni Bernard for a while, and then, you know, it was P. Ryan last year and that sort of thing. So he doesn't have a ton. He's not like Derrick Henry with the amount of carries every single year. So, you know, I think there's still a little bit of gas left in that tank there. I think this is kind of one of probably his last seasons with the Bengals going forward. And that's kind of where some of that writing on the wall with the contract stuff came into play here, where, you know, they're looking to extend some of these other guys. And that was an area that they had to kind of, you know, chisel away at a little bit. But P. Ryan was a guy that just, he did a lot of the dirty work, the pass protection stuff. He was a physical guy. He didn't have the speed or the long speed that Mixon has, but the one thing that he did have, Mixon, for being a big guy, a pretty built guy, he has some trouble sometimes evading the first tackler. I mean, he'll make yardage and he'll go down the field. There are times where he'll break tackles, but he, for as big as he is and as physical of a runner he is, he doesn't always break the first tackle, whereas Perine was much more adept at that. And I think that's where a lot of fans or a lot of chatter came from, like, hey, man, this guy has got to get some more carries. I think the Bengals thought that they were going to bring back Perine, and they thought that the deal that they gave him was pretty similar to what Denver gave him, but it was more just the fact that he's going to have a higher profile role, like you said, Glenn. I mean, he could be, you know, instead of being number two with the Bengals, he could be kind of 1A, 1B, you know what I mean? Like, he could be one of those guys there that gets more carries and sees more attention. But I think he did a lot of the dirty work. I think he was a valuable guy in the locker room, and he's going to be missed. And the Bengals are trying to figure out his replacement right now.
Yeah. I'll tell you what got me, Anthony, was the Joe Mixon, the smirk he had on his face when he was found not guilty of aggravated menacing. He had like this little smirk, and I was like, all right, that was all right. Cool, dude.
Yeah.
You're not guilty of aggravated menacing. Nice. Yeah. But ultimately I think that's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the backfield there. My question is around the wide receiver room. I mean, it's the same guys we've seen before. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Higgins has expressed his want for a contract, you know, his desire for a contract extension. What's going on there from an internal perspective, the Bengals look, you know, inside looking out, because, you know, we are only outside looking in. So what's going on with the Higgins deal? Is there anything, is there a possibility that truly Joe does enough in his contract where he can keep these guys?
Well, I think that's part of, honestly, one of his, my feeling on it is that I think part of his contract demands is yes to be, you know, the highest paid, you know, it's the next, you know, the next quarterback, right? Each contract keeps one upping the next one. It's what happened with, you know, Lamar and Herbert and Hurts and, you know, all these guys. So I think he wants that and be the highest paid and all that. I think guaranteed money, I think length of contract, all that stuff matters. But I think the ability, I think he wants a commitment from the Bengals as well to be able to keep Chase and Higgins. I think, you know, I mean, and so that might be something that is or isn't holding things up. I don't know. I know the Bengals want to keep T. Higgins. It's just a matter of making the numbers work, keeping that core together. So, you know, I think, you know, I just think that it's a matter of kind of crunching the numbers and making it fit. Higgins wants to stay. And I don't think him kind of being a 1B behind Chase really matters to him that much, because he still puts up numbers. He still gets attention. He still, you know, gets the accolades. So I don't think that's a problem. There's nothing about, you know, anything disgruntled or anything like that about him and his contract situation. But, you know, he has one less year on his rookie deal than Burrow could or would have. So, you know, it's a little more urgent to get that done. But, I mean, it's also kind of a domino effect. You get one done, hopefully the other gets done, and all the pieces start to fall into place here. But he's you guys know, he's an excellent player, and it would be a tough loss if the Bengals were not able to keep Higgins in that wide receiver room. There were a couple of other additions in that room, rookie Charlie Jones and another Another rookie, Andre Yoshibosh. I think I'm saying it right. Yoshibosh. Who played really well in the preseason. So those are some names in there, along with Trenton Irwin, the guy with the flowing blonde hair, the slot receiver. I don't know if you remember that guy or not, but those are some of the other names in that wide receiver group.
Yeah, he was an undrafted kid for a while. He was an undrafted kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of has worked his way up, and yeah.
You know, it's hard to not root for the undrafted guys, even if they are wearing the wrong colors. But I gotta ask you on the other side of the ball about Dax Hill. I think some people are, I don't know, for some reason, it seems like this guy gets a lot of reaction from the fan base, stepping into some big shoes, no doubt about that. But what's your thought on really both the safeties taking over for, I mean, I've said it on the show. I mean, it's arguably they were the best safety duo in the league last year. You lose both guys. What do you think Dax Hill and I guess Nick Scott are going to be able to do to fill those roles?
It's going to be difficult. And the hope, you know, I mean, there's going to be some growing pains because I think they're going to try and mix in rookie Jordan Battle somewhere in there as well, too. Maybe all three on the field at the same time. Certain packages just depends. They kind of, you know, they lost a lot of players in their defensive backfield. They kind of lost a hybrid player in Trey Flowers, a guy that was kind of a slot, you know, he's a big guy. He came from Seattle. You know, he was a boundary corner there, struggled in that role, but came to Cincinnati and they found a nice niche for him where he was following tight ends a lot or slot receivers and where he's kind of playing a little more close to the line and it suited him well. They lost him too. So now you've got Battle, you've got Dax Hill, you've got Nick Scott, all new players into the mix and limited preseason snaps, that sort of thing. So you got a inexperienced, limited snaps, that sort of thing. And you go, well, man, how steep's this learning curve going to be here? Dax Hill has all of the skills that you would want out of a player in today's NFL. I think he could be a hybrid guy. You can play him in the slot. You can play him at safety. You can do a lot of different things with him. He made an excellent play against, I think it was Jordan Love in the preseason, knocking away a pass where it seemed like he just came out of absolutely nowhere and covered a lot of ground to do so. So I think the excitement's there. The athleticism's there. It's just, man, it's a lot. It's a loss of a lot of experience and leadership at the safety position all at once. And like you said, Glenn, I mean, that was a really solid position for 3-4 years for the Bengals with those two guys back there, and losing both of them at the same time, the same offseason, is tough. And so I think Nick Scott can be serviceable. I think he could be an okay player. I think there's going to be a step back there, but the hope is, with some additions up front, you boost the pass rush. You've been able to keep two excellent linebackers and extend Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson long-term. Hopefully they continue to grow as good players. And so things kind of develop a little bit more in front of them as they gain experience, gain footing, and kind of learn to play with each other back there.
Man, I tell you what, Glenn and I both liked Logan Wilson a lot coming out. And I think Glenn a little more than me, but I think we both liked him. Mm-hmm. And you guys landed a good one there. Now it worked out with us with Roquan, but certainly – good find for you guys nonetheless. Now we gotta let you go with this one, Anthony. Kind of want to wrap this one up with really talking about the AFC North. Now it's hard to say as Ravens fans that we're gonna sit here and be the kings of the North when there's a team like the Bengals hanging around, but obviously, you know, the AFC North we believe is the most competitive division in football. We think it's the most physical, the toughest, and the deepest. So What is your prediction this year for the Bengals in the AFC North? Where do you think they end up, and what does that look like in your eyes?
I think best case scenario for the Bengals is 4 losses. So what would that put them at, 13-4? And I would have 3 of those 4 losses, one each against each of the AFC North teams.
Just splitting, right?
I think this division is so freaking tough. And so that's where I kind of have their ceiling. And then maybe you lose another 1 or 2 against a San Francisco, a Buffalo, you know, Kansas City's in there as well. So Bengals have a tough schedule. They have a tough schedule. There's no doubt about it. And the crux of that tough schedule is in the division. I think I had them, like I said, I think their cap is probably 13 wins. I could see them, you know, floating between 10 and 12 pretty easily as well. I think they're a playoff team. I think they have a deep run in them this year, especially if they stay healthy and things fall into place the way that they want them to. But the Ravens are really, really good. The Steelers, you know, they're hard to figure out, but they are always in it, always in it at the end. And the Browns are a complete enigma to me because they could either be a double digit win team or that thing could implode. And I don't know. You tend to kind of fall back on what we've seen from Cleveland, which is the implosion year after year, right? But, man, I mean, they've got pieces. They've got pieces. And so this division's really, really tough. It would not surprise me if three teams from this division make it in to the playoff bracket. Some people are even picking all four of them to make it, which is crazy to me. But, it wouldn't surprise me if three make it. But, I mean, you look at it, we kind of know the favorites or the power players in the conference right now. You know, it's Bengals, it's Ravens, it's Buffalo, it's Kansas City. Are the Jets in there now with Aaron Rodgers? Maybe. I mean, and then, you know, Miami. The Jags are getting a lot of run. Miami's getting a lot of run. So those are kind of the players, the Steelers. I mean,
Chargers.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to sort it out there. So it's going to be who does well in the division. It's going to be who stays healthy. And you saw what happened with the Bengals last year. They were kind of mediocre record wise at the middle of the year, and then they
kind of started out in a hole, right?
Yeah, they had injuries, and then the Burrow thing where he had appendicitis. It took him a couple weeks to kind of get his footing there, and then finally after Chase came back and DJ Reader came back around the middle of the year, they really went on a run. But sometimes that's what it takes too, whether it's the Bengals or somebody else. You just got to get hot at the right time. So. I see this division as a total gauntlet for sure.
Well, it's going to be absolutely awesome. And we can't wait to catch up with you, for those two games. Hopefully, if you don't mind, in a couple weeks, it's only going
to
be.
I'll try not to be late next time.
Good, man.
Well, don't worry. Glenn already knows that if we have to be somewhere on time, I'll make up for it by being late. So,
There you go.
Yeah, well, so I have one pass. See that? Yeah. Now I have a pass.
Well, look, hey, Anthony, just ask me to come on because I'll be there on time. You know, Jimbo might be there.
Two separate start times. Is that
yeah, yeah. Put mine at 8:00 and Glenn's at 8:15. We'll show up at the same time.
Yeah, there we go. That's perfect. Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll talk soon in a couple weeks. And I'd like to say good luck to the team, but I can't. But good luck to you, Anthony.
Yeah, man. We're hoping for the best.
Good luck to you both as well.
That's right. Nothing but prosperity for Anthony.
Yeah, well, hey, it's always great chatting with you guys. I appreciate the invitation. We're going to get you on our show, too, coming back. So
we've been on before. I already know where to find you. But for those that haven't seen Anthony before, let the folks know where they can find your stuff.
Well, we're on YouTube, The Orange and Black Insider. And it's part of SB Nation, which is, an umbrella of a lot of different sports blogs. Cincy Jungle is the one that covers the Bengals. For Ravens fans, if they want to go see the Ravens site, Baltimore Beatdown is the name of the Raven site in the SB Nation network. If they want to check out some news and stuff there too. So, OB Insider or @Bengals OBI on Twitter. And, appreciate what you guys do. Love your show. And, we'll catch up soon, hopefully on our end of things. And
yes, sir. Yep.
Awesome.
Thanks, Anthony. Have a good night.
Take care, guys.
All right, man. Yeah. This is going to be, like Anthony said, a gauntlet of an AFC North. I think that is a good way to put it. There is no layups, no easy teams. It's kind of like the Orioles. I mean, I was pulling up the standings, and while the Yankees have been on a bit of a slide here, they're right at around 500 and they're fourth in this division. Most divisions have a fourth place team that is 30 or 40 games below 500. Not the AFC East. So, I mean,
the AL East.
The AL East, AFC. Not the AL East. I mean, they are good from top to bottom. And I think, unfortunately, the Ravens are going to find themselves in the same position where, man, if you're going to win it, you're going to have to be in the teens, I think, in wins if you're going to win this division.
Man, it is going to be a tough slugfest this year. And honestly, what I hope for is health for certainly the Ravens, but, the teams so that we can get that slugfest. Because, I mean, from an entertainment standpoint, some good games lined up. I'll tell you what. Now, obviously, I want Marlo to come back for week two.
Yep.
For sure. I think that might be a pipe dream, but I would love for Marlon to be back week two. But ultimately, we want health all around. Man, that was interesting. I like the way that Anthony always does a good job at being politically confident. Right? Like, best case scenario, four losses, which is an incredible season. So basically what he's saying is they're going to get four losses, but three are going to be in the division. So they're going to go, they're going to split each division opponent. And that's a good way to look at it. I mean, that's just crazy.
But that's a lot of good wins around the AFC outside of the North. I mean, he's talking, like you mentioned, they got what, the Jags, they got the Chiefs, they got the Bills, they got, I mean, they got really, really good teams that they're going to be playing, plus all the ones in the North. No doubt it's going to be an absolute gauntlet. But let's see here. It should be – okay, cool. All right. I'm just making sure our next guest is still on his way, and he absolutely is.
And he had to pay the water bill.
Yeah, don't – you know, it happens. You got to do
what
you
got to
do.
Yeah, man, got to do what you got to do, dude.
But
we,
I do think –
in my line of work, we call it a bio break.
Bio break.
Got to take a quick bio break.
That's fancy. I have to urinate. That's what I do when I go. But no, I do think –
I just do this.
Their defense – that's all you have to do.
I don't mute myself, though.
Savage. Savage. You're going to listen. but I do think them losing their safeties is a big, big loss for them. Those guys, not only were they really, really good, but like Anthony said, they were really smart. They got those other guys lined up in the right position. They were leaders in the locker room off the field. I think that loss is going to be really, really tough. And, yeah, they had a good pass rush. They have two good pass rushers, but they didn't have a good pass rush last year. Like, if you just look at the numbers and their sack totals, they did not live up to, certainly not what they did the year before, where they had two double-digit guys. I mean, they took a step back, so they better hope that pass rush is good enough to carry what I think is to be not the best secondary. Maybe the weakest secondary in the division.
Yeah, man, that's – oh, man. That's like losing two Chuck Clarks without getting a Roquan, right? You know what I'm saying? Something,
right?
Because you're losing high-performing players that are also leaders on the team as far as, like you said, alignments and everything. So that's going to be a tough one. And I hope we can exploit it early on, certainly. I'm not mad about playing him in week two. Like I said, obviously hope Marlon was healthier. But it'll be fun to go into Cincinnati, and it would be so much fun to go in there early on and – and give them a little beat down in their own place, right?
No doubt. Hey, did you see the picture that came out with the Ravens? And it showed we got a pretty tough group of single digits on this team. I don't know if you noticed, but the row that has single digit numbers, I mean, you talk about a gauntlet.
Let me see what I can. Let me see. I saw the picture briefly. Let's see. Two. Does it start? Well, is there anyone? Where's number one on the Ravens?
No, but there's a serious opening right there.
Oh, yeah. Roquan, 0. 2, right. Tyler. 3, OBJ. 4, Zay. 5, Armour Davis. 6, PQ.
Or Laquan.
7. What'd you say?
Laquan, Treadwell.
Oh, well, practice.
Somehow
squad,
they're both still number 5. I don't know how this is happening.
Let's
but
see.
Yeah, go
7?
Ahead.
Oh, 7 is Bateman. 8 is Lamar. 9 is Tucker. Holy crap.
I mean, that's it.
That's 3 Hall of Famers potentially in 0 through 9.
That 0 through 9 is no. There's not a. I mean, Huntley's the only one, but he's a Pro Bowler. Hey, he's a Pro Bowler. But every other guy, I mean, you talk about monsters. I mean, Roquan, OBJ, Zay, Lamar, Justin Tucker. Every single digit is a beast.
Yeah. No. It's
and even Rashad Bateman. Hey, I know he's hurt. He's been hurt a lot, but when he plays, he's
got to play. Rashad, got to play.
That's it. That's it.
Got to play. Well, let's bring in our guest here. Let's give him his best WWE. Welcome. Let's hear it.
Yeah, no doubt. New guest to the show, new friend of the show, covers the Browns for the Browns Wire. Also a co-host of the Barking Browns Show.
Hello.
Get your help welcoming Jacob Roach to the program. Jacob, appreciate you coming on. Oh, actually.
Oh.
Sorry. At the same time, you know,
that's what people do when they see my face. They're like, nah, gotta get that thing off of there as quick as possible. So I respect the move. I respect
it. Thanks so much for joining us, Jacob. I hope you're having a good evening. I know you've got to be excited about the upcoming season, but yeah, thanks so much for joining us. I got to start off.
Wait, I have the first question, Glenn.
Did I do it again? I tried to jump in there again. All right,
Jacob, how many roaches does it take to cover the Browns?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, like I feel like this is a trick answer.
Where did you
all
just
of them?
That?
One, just you, baby. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. I just came up with that right off the dome.
Dude,
like
you've been on fire lately, Jimbo.
Yeah,
dude. I tell you, you become a dad, and all of a sudden you become an inspiration of like cheesy jokes. I don't know what happens, man. Some chemical change in my brain. It's like
I do dad jokes on our show all the time, and I get a lot of hate for it. So I really appreciate that.
He does too, but he's been on fire lately. You know, I gotta say,
some of them I can't even remember. They're so inspired. It's just
here we
ridiculous.
Go.
But no, legitimately, Glenn, go.
Okay, yeah. I got to ask you this just as like an outsider perspective, because we just had our fantasy football draft, which is one of my favorite days of the year. It's 12 guys that we've all known each other for God knows how long. We all converge into one location. We draft our teams. It's a lot of, you know, shit talking, a lot of laughter. But one thing I'll say at the end of that draft, 12 teams. A lot of
awkward silences.
Yeah, some awkward silences as the clock is ticking and your heart is pounding. But at the end of all those rounds, all 12 teams, nobody drafted Deshaun Watson. And I got to say, look, there's not like we're a bunch of saints in there. But
yeah,
he just rubs people the wrong way, Jacob. So I got to know, what's the fans' reaction? How do they embrace a guy who has such a rough, you know, thing in his past? Like, are fans able to push that aside because he's their guy now?
Yeah, I think a lot of them have. It's been kind of a long process, I think, since last March to get to where we are right now. And I think that a lot of people, like myself, I've learned to kind of compartmentalize that sort of thing, because I think a lot of fans are of the mind of like, we didn't choose him. A lot of them, myself included, I don't want him. Like, I get what it is on the field, but I don't know if it's worth everything that has happened. Like, you can't get on Twitter without saying, if you say something, other fan bases will, you know, come at you for defending this situation. And it's like, no, like, that is not what I'm about. But mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have found ways to just be like, hey, I said this last year. It's kind of like, hey, I was here before Watson. I'll be here after Watson. And I'm not going to like let one man's awful off the field take something that I love. I mean, look at this room behind me, you know, and I think that's where a lot of people are, where it's
you're
just
dedicated,
like,
you're a loyal lover. I can tell, man.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's like how me and my dad first bonded, you know, growing up, like was watching it. It's like, I'm not giving that up for him. But I think a lot of people are like me. I'll never buy his jersey. Like, that's no matter what, that's not going to happen one way or another. But I think there's still a good part of the fan base that left and will never come back. Like, I think that's realistic. And people who like try to say it's all just sunshines and roses and everybody doesn't care, that's just not true. Some of my favorite podcasters are completely done as a result.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it was a weird time for me as well. Like, you know, we've been doing the show for 4 years now, and when the news broke, I have a coworker of mine that is a big Browns fan. He knows the stuff. Like, generally, there's a lot of football people I listen to, like friends that will, you know, talk football, and you're like, okay, you know, I don't know if you really know football. And look, I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but you can tell pretty quickly there's levels to this. Like, he knows his stuff, but way too early, he was way too excited about it. I was like, dude, you're not going to get me excited about it. Like, you're just not. But I totally get it. Feel free to take I call him Deshaun Watson now. Ultimately, I think that's an interesting take. I like your I'm not going to let this person kind of take this away from, you know, being a part of my life, right? Like, ultimately, it's just one guy. And Glenn said it before we started the show. One of the things that's interesting is, like, he wasn't a draft pick of you guys. Yep. And, you know, it's a little different. I kind of see it as he's a mercenary, right? Like, he's bought and paid for to come in and do a job and do your dang job and let's get it done type thing. But I do have one more question about Deshaun as far as that stuff goes, because one of the first things we talked about on the show was when it came to that situation was, like, you come to a new team, you know, you kind of are starting to integrate yourself into the locker room, but there's got to be, I say vets, but probably vanity, there's got to be some guys out there that are like, I'm never following this guy. Like, I have daughters and, like, this is weird. Like, grown men that are mid 30s and they're like, nah, dude, you can't say anything to me. Is that something you still see and kind of hear in the locker room? Is it all over and done with at this point?
So from what has come out that I know about, it feels like it's kind of done and over from that mm-hmm. perspective. And that could easily just be that they're being professional about it, that they understand that, like, hey, he's the quarterback, like, it's not changing. And I got a job to do and I'm going to do it. You know, I think that that's the public persona, but I haven't gotten any kind of indication, but I'm not in that locker room. But I feel like if you could get some people alone, that they would say the same thing that I kind of feel, which is like, hey, he's a talent on the field and there's a good chance that they win because of him. And that's my job. So I'm going to do it and I'll be happy to get the W's. But if I could redo it, I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, I wish that we avoided this situation altogether. Yeah, there's definitely probably still some of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you said professionalism maybe just winning out, and that's why we're not hearing it. But let's get into the Browns and not just Deshaun Watson. We asked our last guest who covers the Bengals, what were the big major changes? And of course,
sorry, my power just went out.
Did it? Oh,
yep.
Well, you're back. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're somehow still.
It's still out. I just connected to my phone really fast.
Look at you, improvised.
It's 100,000 degrees. I'm trying to keep my son at a solid condition.
Oh, no, that's right. It's 100 degrees in Baltimore. Not a good time to lose air conditioning. Well, while Jimmy tries to process this new information in real time. Oh, came back on.
I apologize.
Came right back on. I saw the joy. Yes, the power is back. Pay no attention.
I was literally about to move. Screen. I'm like about to put my house up for sale. It's over. I'm done.
I got some space. I'll let you stay. But we know that the Bengals lost two high-profile safeties. Of course, the Ravens changes were pretty obvious as long as you turn on ESPN with the additions of OBJ and other guys. But what about the Cleveland Browns? What were the biggest losses in the offseason, and who are the biggest new additions?
I think that when you ask Browns fans and you look kind of somewhat objectively, I don't know that any of the losses that they can't overcome. Like it was just a situation where there was a lot of people that had, you know, Jadeveon Clowney's time in Cleveland had just come to an end. He didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be in that situation with Joe Woods. He was inactive for the final game as a result. He's probably the most talented player that they lost, I would say it's probably in that situation. But you look at on offense and you look on defense and you just see where Andrew Berry's tried to right some of the wrongs that he did when it came to building that. But in the end, I think the biggest addition was Jim Schwartz being added with what they added on defense. I mean, you had Za'Darius Smith, who had 78 pressures and 10 sacks. You add that opposite Miles Garrett.
We know him.
Right.
You're still bitter about that guy, Jacob.
I forgot. I wouldn't have brought it up if I remembered. That's my bad. That's on me. Like, well, I can take one for the team on this one. But yeah, you add Za'Darius Smith, you add Ogbo Okoronkwo, who was a pretty good pass rush win rate last year in Houston, and you give them one of the defensive coordinators that is really well known for his ability to maximize defensive line play. Mm-hmm. And use that wide nine with Miles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith and Ogbo Okoronkwo. You can add in Dalvin Tomlinson on the inside. I think Shelby Harris, it was kind of a really under the radar signing that they got towards the end, but they've always had good cover corners in the backfield. And they finally get a free safety in Juan Thornhill, and they give them a truly elite defensive line. I think that this, if they play the way they should, what they look like on paper, that defensive line is absolutely them with Jim Schwartz is the biggest addition. And that's without talking about my favorite player, Elijah Moore. But I think if you look at it top to bottom, I think it's the defensive line mixed in with Jim Schwartz is absolutely what has me the most optimistic.
Wow. Now, I want to ask you this question about the team as a whole, because everyone kind of you looking up who drafted him, Glenn?
I drafted him, actually.
You did?
So I'm going to ask him about Elijah Moore as soon as you're done your question here, James.
So I want to know really about the team as a whole. It's kind of interesting because when you're talking about the AFC North, and we've said it before. We said it like 8 times already on this episode alone. I feel like it's the most competitive division in the NFL. But really, one of the things that a lot of people outside of Cleveland depend upon is the ultimate implosion of the Cleveland Browns, right? Like the inevitable implosion of this team.
Don't remember who they are. Yeah.
Right. But ultimately, like you're a Browns fan, so you're subjective, but also you cover the team, so you have to be objective. Yeah. What makes you feel good about that not happening this year in comparison to other years? Is there something specific, one or two things you can point to that says like, all right, this won't happen because of this guy or this scenario or whatever the case may be?
That's a hard question, like, because I've been trying to answer it all off season, because that's what we get. And you know, and it's like, well, even though that these players are talented, once they put on that orange helmet, it just becomes a whole different story. So I think that when you look at what Kevin Stefanski, he's probably the reason for me. When I look at what he's done in Cleveland, I talked about this on my show just a little while ago. You look at the success he had with Baker Mayfield, and you look at some of the wide receivers that he had played with, that he had coached. What has Rashard Higgins done since he left Kevin Stefanski?
You know,
like, and like, I can show you film on Christmas Day in 2021 of Jarvis Landry, who was just a shell of his former self because he was all banged up, running wide open. Rashard Higgins, who couldn't even find the field after he left Cleveland, running wide open. And it all comes down to, I think, the schematic ability of Kevin Stefanski to call an offense. And I know he gets some hate and there's some situational stuff, but he got the best seasons out of Baker Mayfield. His best season of his career is with Kevin Stefanski. Jacoby Brissett was so incredibly better than he had ever been prior to last season when he goes with Kevin Stefanski. Mm-hmm. We won't talk about the Deshaun Watson six games there at the end, because that was definitely not the best six games of his career. But we're looking at Kevin Stefanski has shown a He has shown the ability to get the most out of what he has. And now he's gotten a truly talented franchise quarterback in my mind. And he has a lot of really nice weapons that he has not been able to coach up prior to this. And if he can coach lesser talent to high production, I think you then mix that in and give him top tier talent. And I think that as a leader, I think he's really going to, he's the reason, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, he's certainly a talented coach. Brilliant offensive mind, it looks like, to this point. Now, I got to ask about the rest of that offense, because it's like, man, when you just look at this team on paper, you go, man, you got Wills at left tackle, Betonio at guard, Teller at right guard, Conklin at right tackle. It's hard to like not like any of those guys. And then Amari Cooper, I mean, route runner extraordinaire. Nick Chubb, maybe the best just runner of the football in the entire league. Donovan Peoples-Jones can take the top off. David Njoku, one of the most underrated tight ends, a guy that can absolutely fly, be a deep threat from the tight end position. And then you add a guy like Elijah Moore to the group, who I think may have been the missing piece from this offense. What are your expectations from that kind of all those guys, and what does Elijah bring to the group?
Elijah Moore was my draft crush in his draft a couple of years ago, and they ultimately took, Greg Newsom in that draft class. And Elijah Moore has just been like this pipe dream for me for several years. And then they find the way to get it. I kept trying to like will it to happen this year. I wrote several pieces on Browns Wire where there's like trade for Elijah Moore. And then they did it. They've shown that his usage is, I think this year will be similar to a couple of years ago from Deebo Samuel, in the sense that they're not the same player and what they can do. But Elijah Moore has his first snap of the preseason, he was in the backfield and they flexed him out from the running back position into the slot. He catches a little 8-yard out route. They run a jet sweep with him for 18 yards on the next play. Like, he is this jack of all trades that I think every coach wants to have, that kind of tool that they can just move around and use in a bunch of different ways. And Kevin Stefanski has seen a little bit of that with Percy Harvin in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at kind of the stuff that he did with Percy Harvin, or what the team did while Stefanski was there, I think you're going to get that with Elijah Moore. He's so dangerous in the open field and his ability to accelerate. He has great body control. I think he's a better route runner than people give him credit for. He's mixed in now with Amari Cooper, who I think is top five in route running in the NFL somewhere, probably maybe top 10. I don't know. He's somewhere in that range. And Elijah Moore has, if you watch what happened in New York, you see a dude that was open a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he was open a lot, and he had Zach Wilson and some other things going on. So like, I understand, you know, why those things didn't work out, but he's like this, this Swiss Army knife. There's the word I was looking for. Sometimes those words, I gotta chase them down. I'll find them eventually, but he's just kind of a Swiss Army knife, where I think they have not had speed in this offense. Like, they haven't had speed in this offense. Like, and now you added him and Marquise Goodwin, and Goodwin comes back from the blood clots last week. And we were I think most of us were kind of shocked that we hadn't heard anything since he had blood clots in his lungs and his legs at the beginning of training camp. And all of a sudden he comes back and he stretches the field. You've got everything back from last year and you're no longer playing in the red zone all the time because you can actually push the field vertically. And I think that this assortment of weapons is just, it's a very diverse wide receiver room. And I think with Elijah Moore in there and all the things he can do in and out of the backfield, I just think that as long as people stay healthy and things go the way they should on paper, that the passing offense can be pretty prolific.
Mm. Well, you got Glenn excited. That's for sure. I know he's feeling good.
You know, I like to see my late round addition of Elijah Moore was not going to be, wasn't a misstep. It doesn't look like to this point.
Yeah. Well, I got to know, Jacob, where do you see this team in stacking up in the AFC North? Like, what's your viewpoint on the North? And then relative to the Browns, where do you see them?
So I did a complete record prediction probably like a month ago after I had talked with Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. He had came on our show and he got me to bump it up a little bit. So I eventually put the Bengals, the Browns, and the Ravens in that order with 12, 11, and 10 wins. So I think that all three of those teams are going to win double-digit games. I don't know ultimately if the Browns are in third or the Bengals are in third or where it goes. I do think I'm not high on Pittsburgh, and I know people will get mad at me for it, but eventually I got to be right. Eventually I have to be right.
They won't get mad at you here, Jacob.
Hey, we can all hate them together.
That's right.
That's one thing we can do together. But I think that they'll lurk back there and maybe make some run at the end of the season, like they always figure out how to do. I think talent wise that Cleveland is right there with Cincinnati. I think Baltimore is right there with them as well. I don't really know like overall how it's going to go, but I think I've got them in second with about 11, maybe 12 wins, just ahead of Baltimore right now.
Wow. You got them finishing good this year, Jacob. 12 wins. Well, one thing I think could kind of derail them, and I think Ravens fans, I know Ravens fans have been quite spoiled here when it comes to kicking. Justin Tucker, I mean, every year I just sit back and I just go, thank God we got Justin Tucker, because I see all the crazy antics going on with kickers being swapped. Here you got the Cleveland Browns, who, correct me if I'm wrong, they spent a third or a fourth round pick last year on a kicker. He's gone, and then they trade a seventh rounder for a guy who lost a kicking competition in L.A. this year.
Yeah, no, there's no corrections there. That's 100% accurate there. It was one of those things where you were just trying to find it, you know. Like, I think they felt pressured about the Evan McPherson thing. Like, they go out, you know, since he goes out and drafts him and he kicks them to the Super Bowl. He was very clutch in those playoffs. And they're like, we're going to get Cade York. This dude can hit it from 65 yards. He can't make a 32 yarder, but he can hit it from 68 yards. He's going to hit a 58 yarder to beat Baker Mayfield in Carolina week one. You're going to love him. And then it's just going to be a disaster after that. And like, it was so bad. I mean, he ends up being 75% is what he ended up being on a field goal percentage. He comes out and like, he misses his first kick, you know, in the preseason. And you're like, oh, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we're doing this. He ends up being 3-6 at one point. Mm. But he goes out there and he makes three straight kicks in the game against Philly, their third preseason game. And you're like, okay, cool. We're getting there. Then he gets two opportunities to hit a game winner because there was a penalty on the Eagles. He pushes it right, which is what he normally does. Then he gets to kick it again. It's under 50 yards. Let's remember it was like 45 mm-hmm. yards. And then instead of pushing it right, he hooks it just awful left. And I'm just like, I don't care if he can make a 58 yarder. We have absolutely got to get this guy. They were to the point where they were like, we're going to go and get Dustin Hopkins. And Hopkins is 84%. He's around league average, but he's like got 50% from 50 plus yarders. Mm. He's like 15 of 30 from 50. And they were like, listen, we don't care about those big kicks. Make the kicks that NFL kickers should make from 45 or less yards, and we'll be totally okay. Mm-hmm. And I feel excited about Dustin Hopkins, and that should tell you exactly where we are with the kicker situation in Cleveland.
Oh gosh, man. Well, I'll tell you what, my last question for you is this. What's the biggest, let me ask this correctly. What should people look out for that aren't Cleveland Browns fans that, you know, they should keep an eye on that the national media isn't picking up on, or somebody that's not an insider isn't picking up on? There's got to be something or a player to keep an eye on as far as the Browns go.
I think the linebackers are better than they've been given credit for. I think they were put in some really bad situations last year, especially by defensive tackle. The defensive tackle was historically bad last year. The Browns had to completely – there's only one player on this 53-man roster that – at defensive tackle that was here last year. And they have five on the roster. So they've got four new defensive tackles on the roster right now. And I think the linebackers, and especially Mahmoud Diabate, with the undrafted free agent out of Utah, who really came out and just flying all over the field, sideline to sideline. I think if they can stay healthy with Diabate and Anthony Walker and Sione Takitaki, has somehow managed to recover from an ACL tear he had in December and is he's healthy. He's probably going to play week one. Wow. I don't really know. It's like the fastest healing ACL.
That deer antler spray, Jacob. He called up Ray and got that deer antler spray.
I won't lie to you. In high school, early in college, I did try some deer antler spray. That's actually hilarious that you bring it up. It's awful. Don't do it. It doesn't do anything for you, and it tastes like crap. Yeah, like it's but so like I think the linebackers are pretty good. And if you want like one specific player, I think Mo Hurst. I think the defensive tackle, he started his career in Oakland, and he's just not been healthy for the past like 2 years. But in the preseason he was kind of a relentless pass rusher. And I think the defensive line, keeping the linebackers clean, and then just kind of watch out for Mo Hurst. I think he has a pretty good shot off the bench.
Yeah, oh, Michigan man. Guy, Harbaugh guy, right? Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. What can you go wrong when you get a hardball guy? Last one for me, just for Ravens fans. What are the Ravens getting in Jadeveon Clowney? If he's motivated, Jacob, what are they getting in Jadeveon Clowney?
An elite run defender, first and foremost. If you go back, and especially in 2021, when he had 9.5 sacks, or maybe it was 9, but he was right around the 9.5 sacks, and he was just truly elite at setting the edge. Like, even when he doesn't make, like, his pass rush has kind of dropped off a little bit last year. Of course, the motivation questions are there, like you said, but he will always be an elite run defender. No matter if he's motivated or unmotivated, he was still elite as a run defender last year. You may not see him always making the tackles for loss, but you're not going to see running backs bounce on the outside when he's out there. He will set the edge in the run game. And if you see a tackle for loss and it's not Jadeveon Clowney, who's standing right next to him that set the edge? It's Jadeveon Clowney's right there. I think that his pass rush is kind of one-dimensional now, but he's still an athletic freak, and a guy that went number one overall. But with what you've got on the other side, especially with Owe over there, I won't even talk about the fact that the Ravens continue to draft my draft crushes and Travis Jones and David Ojabo, Rashad Bateman. They do it year after year for me, and they just like to just spear right to my heart. But in terms of run defense, he's just going to be elite no matter what. And I think when you're talking about some of the pass rushers that the Ravens do have, I think that's more than enough for what they paid him.
All right, fair enough. Well, I like to hear that. That's for sure. Now, the most important thing, Jacob, is where can folks find what you're working on?
Yeah, you can
let them know.
Yeah, you can check me out at brownswire.usatoday.com. I'm over there every day, sometimes more so than others. And then you can go to our YouTube channel is Network 216, and I have a couple of shows on over there, like 3 or 4 a week.
Yeah, man. No, that's awesome. You're doing a lot of stuff. I tell you what, tell Jeff, good old Jeff Risden. I'm not sure if you know him or not, but I'm guessing you do. Tell him that the boys at 410 Sports Talk said what's up. I think Jeff was one of our first guests.
Super nice guy.
We ever had on. Yeah, the dude is the OG of guests for us here at the show. And he's a good one. That guy knows his football, I'll tell you what.
Oh, God,
So thank you so much for your time tonight. We appreciate it. Enjoy the season opener. And hopefully once we see you guys, you know, the both times in the division matchups, we can have you on again. That'd be awesome, man.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Thank you so much, and have a great night.
Hi, guys. Thanks, Jacob. See you. Yeah, he likes them Browns.
Yeah, man. Well, look, on paper, it's really hard, like, not to. Always, you know, on paper, right? Like, I'll never forget the ESPN article with, like, OBJ and Landry and I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Baker and
Njoku. I mean, yeah, they had names because you're right. You just look at their depth chart. It's like, where is there a bad player? Like, there's – yeah. I mean – it doesn't look like there's a bad one, at least on paper. Now, special teams, you know, I mean, my goodness, it's crazy how, like, people want to discount special teams, but how many kickers lost their team games last year? I mean, not just from missing kicks, but literally it got to a point where teams were making decisions where they're not kicking 45 yarders because they have no confidence their guy can make it, and they're going for it on fourth down. And so it's like, right. Man, you know, as much as people want to say a kicker isn't a football player, and you know, when you watch practice, it doesn't look like they're really part of the team. They're off by themselves, but there's no doubt they can
need a
win
kicker.
They can win you a game and they can lose you a game. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to Thursday. We're going to do our best to get a Texans guest on. It is game week, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention our sponsor for this season, BetUS. Check out the link in the description. As we've been mentioning, BetUS is the place to go for all your prop bets, season-long bets, in-game bets, pre-game bets, over-unders, all of it. Make yourself some shekels. Support the show. It's a fun way to do it. They match, and then some. They'll give you up to 125% of your initial investment, up to $2,500. That's right. 125%. So go check them out. But Glenn, I think that's it for us tonight, my man. It was a great show. Thank you so much for getting the guests on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, so you know it's hot. Thank you so much for coming out.
Now I want to do a quick, just to let you guys know, since the season starts this Thursday.
Thursday, didn't I?
Typically we would record on Thursday night and go live, but of course with the season opener, we're going to enjoy the season opener. So we'll be back Friday.
Yeah,
we have a guest already lined up who will be joining us to talk some Houston Texans football. Let us know, kind of similar to what we saw from these guys, who let us know what the big changes were, what to expect, game predictions, who to look out for, and all those great things, getting it right from the source. But as Jimmy said, unfortunately, our Steelers guy, just, you know, scheduling purposes, does a lot of things, weren't able to get him on tonight, but we will certainly get you caught up on all the Steelers moves once we play them later on in the season. But that's it for us tonight. Thank you all for joining us, and we will see you on Friday.
See you.